This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. This year, Israel is marking its 70th anniversary. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of Israel and where we are now with Harold Boy. He's a retired minister in Kalamazoo, member of the Kalamazoo Nonviolent Opponents of War. He has spoken often publicly about the conflict between Israel and Palestine, including teaching a class for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Harold, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Gordon. I'm glad to be here.
How should we look at this big picture, 70 years of an Israeli state? What has that meant for the international community? What has it meant for the people of the Middle East?
Well, obviously, it's been what the Palestinians called Nakba, which is catastrophe. So for the Palestinians, it's been basically a tragedy for them. For the Jews, it's interesting because most Jews didn't really agree with the Zionist project in the beginning. And so, but later, especially after the World War II with the Holocaust and then with the founding of Israel, and then in particular with the 67 war in June, that changed, especially in America. But I think what it means to the world is that this is a continuing conflict that never gets resolved, and it infects the rest of the region, and in fact makes the world less safe, I think, this conflict. And God knows where we're going with it. I don't think it's going to be resolved anytime soon. I think it's going to take, frankly, several generations. But I think in the meantime, we progressives should focus on human rights. For the Palestinians in particular.
Back up a little bit and explain for people who don't follow this closely. Yeah. Zionist Project.
Zionist Project, okay. That was a project that was, well, it began in the late 19th century with Theodor Herzl, who's considered the father of Zionism. And the idea was to find a homeland for the Jews because of the anti-Semitism in Europe. So interestingly, it's a European project. It's a project that is a result of the anti-Semitism, in particular in Russia with the pogroms. And pogrom means destruction, but with villages, Jewish villages being destroyed and so on, and Jews being made refugees, very much like the Palestinians now. And so there was that rational idea that the Jews should have a safe place to live. That's rational. And then there was this other part, which was they would like to have a place where they have a strong self-identity. And they were thinking of building a nation state. And the reason that came up in the late 19th century, that was the age of nationalism, where there were new nations being formed, like Hungary, Italy, the Balkans, and so on. And Theodor Herzl talked about the idea of colonialism. And at that time, colonialism was not a dirty word. He actually talked about the Zionist project being a colonial project. And essentially what it is, it's a settler colonial project, as opposed to a conventional colonial project, like, for example, what Britain did in India, which is to be there and take the resources. But a settler colonial project is where the settlers come and they take over the land. And that means that you have to evict people. We've experienced that in North America with what happened to the Native Americans. And there's some pretty profound analogies here because both were done with Europeans. And, the European model and European mindset that the Europeans were better, they're chosen, and that in our case, in this continent, they were savages, they weren't Christian, that kind of thing. So as a result, unlike the conventional settler project, It tends to be you have to sometimes do really terrible things. You have to evict these people and often kill them and create massacres, that kind of thing.
So the United States relationship with Israel mm-hmm. has been getting more attention especially since Donald Trump was elected president.
Mm-hmm.
What is the proper U.S. role here in terms of, you know, these are circumstances which are outside the borders of the U.S., but obviously they have a big impact on global politics and global security. So what's the right thing for the United States to do when it comes to Israel and Palestine?
Well, in my opinion.
Well, it's who we're talking to, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, things need to change pretty dramatically, in my opinion. One of the things that's happening now is that the United States gives Israel $3.8 billion in military aid, which far outstrips aid to any other country. And the second most aid goes to Egypt, which is interesting because Sisi, the military dictator, took over with a coup d'etat, and we're not supposed to give money to countries where military dictators take over like that. But we do. But it doesn't make much sense to give this money to Israel since they have the biggest military in the Middle East and the fourth largest military in the world. They're not in danger of being attacked by anybody, you know, which is interesting given our military budget. Like, we're going to be attacked by somebody, and we spend hundreds of billions of dollars on defense. So that's one thing. And but the other thing is we protect Israel. We protect them, like in the United Nations, when there are resolutions to condemn Israel for their violation of human rights. And I think we need to really focus on human rights. It's hard to say where we're going to go from here. I don't know about a two-state solution. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's going to work.
Why not? Why wouldn't a two-state solution work?
Because the West Bank is like Swiss cheese right now. There's no contiguous kind of area between Gaza and the West Bank. And now, in particular, since the Trump administration moved the embassy to Jerusalem, it's hard to see how East Jerusalem could be the capital of a new Palestinian state. That's going to be problematic.
Well, if there's no two-state solution, where do you go? Because this is what everybody says.
I know.
Even the hardliners, even on all sides here, will say, "Well, we need a two-state solution."
I think at this point, it's just really hard, Gordon, to put the toothpaste back into the tube. I mean, with all the settlements now, I mean, I think what is there about 300,000 Jewish settlements in the West Bank, something like that. And it's just a really difficult thing. I think what we need to do is focus on human rights and our democratic values and really condemn Israel as a people and our government when Israel violates those human rights, in particular what's happening in Gaza right now. That's an awful situation. And it just boggles the mind that these people are demonstrating because the conditions in Gaza are untenable. It's like the Warsaw Ghetto, World War II. With the density of the population, with disease, people die young. I mean, the average age is under 18. And so these people are demonstrating for their human rights, and they're being picked off by the Israeli soldiers with snipers. We should condemn that, all of us. And at the very least, I mean, in terms of a long-term solution, I think ideally, hopefully, that there is a secular state where there are rights for Israelis, for Jews, Muslims, Christians. They're Palestinian Christians, by the way. They're being oppressed. That's something people don't understand. A two-state solution, I don't know. At this point, I think it's not realistic.
Is the fear on the side of the Israelis in any way, if not justified, understandable by, say, the actions of Hamas, that there is fear of attacks on the Israeli people, and that is why, for instance, you do see what happens in Gaza?
Yes. There's fear, and it's understandable. I don't approve of violence from either side. I don't approve of the suicide bombings by the Palestinians. But I think, you know, getting back to what happened in this continent with the Native Americans, I mean, we're living on Potawatomi land right now, right? And given how we visited upon these people violence, that we took their land, we killed the people. And so they were violent in return. And so I think what you have to see is their violence defensive or offensive? And the way I see it, the Israelis and the Zionists have been offensive from the get-go, from the very beginning. And that was the plan. There was a plan, it was called Plan D, that was set up by the Zionists on March 10th, 1948, under David Ben-Gurion, with a plan that was very particular about how they were going to take over Palestine. And they destroyed 531 villages, took a half the population away, 750,000 people made refugees. Many of them live in Gaza. They're the descendants of those refugees. So I think that they have good reason to feel afraid, the Israelis. I think part of the problem is I think the Israelis suffer too, not like the Palestinians, but I think they suffer because they have to know that what they're doing is wrong. I mean, it's like the segregationists in the South. You know, they had to know that was wrong on some deep level. And I think when you live in an oppressive society like that and you're the oppressor, I think it means that you don't live a life of security and joy. It's tough on Israelis, too. And as a matter of fact, many young Israelis are moving now out of Israel. That's a phenomenon that's happening that Israel is trying to contend with, especially the professionals, young professionals.
Well, if you're going to get to eventually a secular state that you mentioned at some mm-hmm. point, or if somehow the idea of a two-state solution could be revived. Now, you've mentioned what the United States should do and what Israel should do. Is there some movement that the Palestinians do need to make, perhaps some sort of a condemnation of Hamas or some way that shows that they are willing to move, not trying to play both sides here necessarily, but just that there is some responsibility amongst Palestinians?
Well, in 1988, the Palestinians did come to a reckoning of accepting Israel as a state and supporting peaceful means, negotiations. Hamas, it's like if they did, let's go back to the example of the Native Americans. I mean, you know, the southern tribes, like the Cherokee, were peaceful tribes. And actually, they were very much like, they're trying to be more like us. You know, they had a constitution. They actually built brick buildings and all that stuff in Florida and Georgia and places like that. And what happened? They got removed. You know, the more violent tribes did perhaps defend, like the Apaches and the Comanches did protect this area for a while. So I guess if you're asking Hamas to just give up using violence, how's that going to help them? I mean, what's it going to do? Is it going to make Israel say, okay, we're going to take down the wall. We're going to let you have commerce with other nations. You know, we're going to take away the siege, the blockade, which is an act of war, by the way. And because it's an act of war, if the Hamas and the Gazans attack Israel, that's their right. Because, I mean, go back to the 67 war where Israel initiated an attack on Egypt, a preemptive attack. What was the justification from that? Because that's not supposed to be legal to do an attack. It was because Egypt blockaded the Gulf of Tehran, and that was their rationale. So Gaza really has the right to attack Israel because they're under siege. Just like I said, the Warsaw Ghetto, they had an uprising in Warsaw Ghetto. Do the Jews think that was wrong? You know, the Warsaw Ghetto. So anyway, but I don't know. Should Hamas? I mean, again, I don't agree with violence anyway.
So is there a symbolic gesture
that Hamas could do,
or the Palestinians?
Well, the Palestinians already have done that. I mean, they did that in '88. They already have said that they recognize Israel, that Israel should exist, and they were going to work the Palestinian Authority. You know. that they're going to work with Israel and try to negotiate a two-state solution. That was the idea with the Oslo Accord. The idea was with the Oslo Accord that Israel wouldn't build settlements, but they did anyway. So they've been reneging on a lot of agreements. But, you know, I think...
Have the Palestinians lived up to agreements that they have made? Or is there any area where they have also failed to follow through?
You know, I don't know if... well, you know, again, it's sort of like, you know, having the Cherokee negotiate with Andrew Jackson. You know, like, how many horses do you get to do on the Trail of Tears? I mean, the Palestinians are they're powerless. I mean, there's this image I have in mind of a Palestinian boy throwing a rock at a Israeli tank. That's the nature of the power differential. So, anyway, I don't know. Have Palestinians reneged on their agreements? I don't know. I really don't know. All I do know is that Israel is really in control.
What's the problem with putting the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem?
Well, the problem is, if you believe in a two-state solution, that the idea was that East Jerusalem is supposed to be the capital of the new Palestinian state. And this makes it very problematic. I mean, are they going to have the Israeli and the Palestinian capital right beside each other? And it's that kind of problem. And it gives succor to the Zionists, who have the idea that Palestinian belongs to them, the entire Palestine. In fact, you know, the Zionists believe the whole region belongs to them, you know, the greater Palestine. That's what they believe. And, you know, you may wonder, why do they treat the Palestinians so badly? Well, it's because they believe the Palestinians shouldn't be there. They believe they should move away. You know, they should move to Jordan or Syria or something like that, and that they should have all the land. And that's why they continue to build the settlements, even though they violate international law and UN resolutions and actually American foreign policy. But, you know, from their point of view, it's their land. And so they have a right to do that.
Is it then the case that recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, I mean, mm-hmm. is that problematic? I mean, beyond the embassy, in other words.
Well, that was, yeah, I mean, see, the problem was there was a partition by the United Nations in 1947, and it was a crazy kind of partition, which didn't make much sense. But the UN was new at the time, and there was a lot of pressure for them to do this. But anyway, the Israelis, the Zionists were given a certain part of the land, and the Palestinians were given a certain part of the land. And Jerusalem was supposed to be an international city, according to this plan. After the 67 war, Israel took it over. Now, they had put their capital there from the very beginning, you know, in Jerusalem, but they took over East Jerusalem, and they evicted some 800 Palestinians. And there's the Western Wall, which is a holy site for the Jews. They evicted many Palestinians from that area so they could have the whole area. It's important to note, by the way, that before the Zionist project, you know, in the late 19th century, Jews and Muslims got along fairly well under the Ottoman Empire, and that Jews were allowed to, you know, worship at the Western Wall. You know, I mean, they were charged a tax, but so were the Christians. But they were treated much better in the Ottoman Empire than they were in Europe at that time, when anti-Semitism was reigning. But I think, we didn't recognize Jerusalem as a capital, that we have an embassy in Tel Aviv, because it's a reflection of our concerns, supposedly, for the Palestinians, you know, for their right to have a capital and not to recognize what happened after 67, that, you know, Israel, you know, took in all this extra land. And
I want to go back to something you just noted there about a history of anti-Semitism.
Right.
How much does that still influence what happens today? And I guess I think of the old Soviet Union, which was very aggressive around its borders. Well, they had been invaded several times. And a lot of people saw that as the reason that they would, say, go into Afghanistan. Is what drives a lot of Israel still today is the fear of what anti-Semitism can lead to, and therefore the fear that somebody is going to commit some sort of violent act.
I think absolutely. I think it's absolutely true. I think after 2,000 years, but it's important to note that that there was anti-Judaism, that they were against Jews because of the religion. But in the latter part of the 19th century, it was a German who created this term, anti-Semitism, which is ironic because the Arabs are Semitic people too. But it was the idea that it wasn't what Jews believe, it's what they were. And it was based on race and that kind of thing. And in the later part of the 19th century, there was this rise of anti-Semitism, in particular in Russia with the pogroms. But it's important to note that most Jews didn't believe in the idea of going to Palestine. In fact, if you know Fiddler on the Roof, which was from a story written by Shalom Aleichem, you know, which he's a Jewish writer, but he took this Shalom Aleichem, which is a Muslim greeting, meaning peace be with you. But anyway, at the end, where do they go? They're forced out of their pale settlement in Russia. They go to Chicago. That's where they wanted to go. So Jews in this country have fared fairly well, and they want safety. That's reasonable. I think there is that kind of paranoia that affects many Jews.
As you noted, Jews in this country have fared fairly well.
Yeah.
But I think you could make an argument that people in this country have lived a much different experience in the last 70 years than people in Israel.
In what way, Gordon? What do you mean?
Safety, security.
Absolutely.
All of that. It's a very
But the question is,
mindset.
How much was this created by the Zionists? I mean, did they create their own violence? And the thing is, they use violence to evict these people. I mean, they created massacres. The Yad Dasan or whatever. I'm trying to think. But they massacred people in these villages. They destroyed 531 villages, tore down all the houses, evicted at 750,000 people. So you know, it's natural for the Palestinians to want to fight back, I would think. I mean, again, I don't approve of the violence. I wish they didn't do it. But on the other hand, you know, like we look at the Cherokee and the southern tribes and how they were peaceful, and look what happened to them. I don't know. It's a conundrum. I mean, how do you resist? And I think part of the problem is the Palestinians don't have many friends in the world, not even the Arab states. The Arab states use their tragedy to promote their own political whatever agenda. But there are not many friends of the Palestinians right now.
One more point on Jewish people in the United States as opposed to Israel is that I don't know what the polling says right off the top of my head, but if you talk to Jewish people in the United States, you will not find uniform support
for
Israel.
No, you won't.
So again, there is a difference with being separated and being able to look at it from a distance as opposed to being right in it. Right.
Well, it's true. I mean, actually, more and more, especially younger Jews, are not are being critical of Israel. In fact, I have there's a one Jew in particular, a man named Philip Weiss, who was W-E-I-S-S, Weiss or Weiss. I pronounce it German, but he was a reporter for the New York Times, and he has a site, Mondo Weiss, Weiss.net. And, you know, he talks about, the purpose of that is to look at the media, primarily the New York Times, and how it promotes the Zionist cause and is less sympathetic to the Palestinians. And he talks about how he'd been in Gaza and that it was like being in the Warsaw Ghetto. I mean, there was a picture book that was very famous in the late 40s that Jews really, you know, a lot of Jews had ownership of, and it was of the Warsaw Ghetto. And he said, you know, the Gaza is like that. So, you know, he is critical of Israel. I belong to an organization called Jewish Voice for Peace. I'm part Jewish. My grandmother was Jewish, but I'm not Jewish. But they do allow non-Jews to join. But it's many Jewish voices who speak out and criticize Israel and its violation of human rights. So, yeah, it's not monolithic. It never has been. And in fact, like I said before, most Americans did not support the idea of Zionist project. In fact, my friend Connie Ferguson, her father, you know, Jew, lived in Chicago. He didn't believe in the idea of supporting Israel because he was an American. He didn't like this idea of divided loyalty. So, yeah, the Jews are not uniform on this at all.
There's a lot here that we've talked about, but I know there's a lot more that we didn't get to. If you wanted to take just a brief amount of time here and maybe touch on a couple things that we did not talk about.
Well, I was going to read a quote from this book. It's one of the best, most important books in my life. It's called Conscience and Courage, Rescuers of Jews During the Holocaust by Eva Fogelman. And she talks about how her father was saved by a Polish baker in a Polish village where every Jew was killed except for her father. And so she wondered, why did the baker do this? And she talks about how, you know, there were these rescuers were all kinds of people. I mean, you know, there were good people and bad people, criminals, even murderers, but they saved Jews. And why was that? And the thing about it is, some of them believe in God and some didn't believe in God because, you know, the Holocaust made them believe in. But the bottom line is that they, when they saw a Jew suffering, they didn't see the other. They saw somebody who was human and needed help. And so what I like to promote is the idea of this universal message. I mean, I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister, but I like to consider myself a universalist because we all love our children and we love our spouses and we want to do good in the world, we want to be involved in artistic endeavor, make a difference in the world. That's universal, that's human. And I would like for us to all think that way, that, you know, we're all part of the human family, and that in the bottom, the most important thing is that human beings should be treated with respect. That's the bottom line.
Harold, thank you very much for your
time. Well, thank you, Gordon.
Harold Boy is a retired minister in Kalamazoo. He's also a member of the Kalamazoo Nonviolent Opponents of War, and he has taught classes on the Israel-Palestine conflict for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.